You are listening to WRUU Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM and WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I am so excited to be here with you today. My guest today, his name is Drew Proctor, and he is a devoted husband. He's a dog dad. He's a Delco native. He's the RV king. He's a Cancer. He's a Haverford High School graduate like myself, and he's also a superstar. So welcome to the show, Drew. Are you there?
Thank you, Christy. I don't know about what did you say, king?
Yes, the RV king. Yes,
RV king. Yeah, I don't know about that, but thank you, I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. No, it's true. Really, I'd love to just dive right into your story, how you got to be where you are with your beautiful wife. And by the way, before we get started with that, happy belated birthday! I saw that you turned 51, July 14th.
I did. Yes.
Awesome. Yes. How does that feel, being 51?
Everything's breaking internally.
I hope not. Awesome. I wanted to ask you, too. Well, actually, let me share this with you real quick, because I like to do this on the show. Do you know what your name means, the name Drew?
I do not.
Nope. Okay. So I looked it up, and it means manly, brave, and strong. And it's actually traditionally a masculine name. And it's become more popular lately as a gender-neutral name, which I think is so cool.
Well, you know, it was always, you know, the only other Drew I ever knew was Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
You know? So as growing up as a kid, you're like, you know, people would compare you to a girl's name sometime because Drews are normally Andrew, and I'm just a Drew.
Oh.
You know, and it was the D because my father was David, my brother was Dean, and I was Drew. So it was kind of a D thing, and that's why they kicked the and out of the Andrew and just did Drew. And my middle name is my father's name, and my brother's middle name was my grandfather's name, which is my father's middle name. And, you know, so there's a whole thing to it in regards to family, but I had no idea what that's what it really meant. So,
yeah, does that resonate with you at all? Does that sound...
I think so, yeah, and I think my wife would agree with you with that, you know? So,
yes. Where do you think strength comes from, speaking as a man? Where do you find the strength? Where is that?
Well, a lot of that strength was developed watching my father and my father teaching me that strength. And, you know, growing up in a 50-style household, I mean, my mom kind of worked on and off, and she actually always had some sort of small job of some sorts. But my father was the breadwinner, you know, and my father raised our house as a 50-style house, and, you know, my mom took care of the kids, my mom cooked, my mom cleaned, my father did all the breadwinning and then took care of all the chores, the, you know, the repairs and the outside of the house. And, you know, I think that's where a lot of that came from for me, you know. And then obviously most of my friends, it was the same in their household. I mean, you know, our generation, we were raised in that kind of generation where our parents were raised. Mom was inside, dad was outside, mom took care of the kids in the house, inside, dad did everything else, you know, and everybody around me was like that, you know. And then I grew up partially in Marietta, Georgia. So from 85 to 90, 91, you know, I was in Marietta, Georgia, and it was really Southern then. I mean, it still is, but it was much more Southern then and nowhere near as busy back then as it is today. And you know how Southern households are. They're even, I feel, more of that kind of style, you know. And that's where I kind of learned the yes, ma'am, yes, sir, you know, those type of things, because we never said those in my house until we got down south, and that's how you talk to people. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. You know, so that was interesting because I was a kid. I mean, I was, 13 or something. So So anyway, I'm going to ramble. You're going to have to stop me because I'm going to ramble about things.
Well, I wish we had 4 hours together, but we don't today. But I love, thank you. And I love how you brought up the manners. I do bring this up quite often on the show because, again, I'm from up north too. We did not grow up having to use the yes, ma'am, yes, sir. As a mother of two, I do not force that, especially with my younger child who's 10. I never, ever force that. I believe personally, this is just, you can throw it out the window if you want, anybody who's listening, but I think that if you force something, then eventually somebody's going to just push back and just not want it at all. So instead of doing that, I just model that. I say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, because it feels good to say yes, sir, yes, ma'am. I feel, right?
It's respect. You're showing people respect. And a lot of times it puts a smile on your face. I mean, we've been out west for quite some time, and when we got back here, our first job that we did back here a few weeks ago was in Tennessee, right outside of Nashville, and everybody was responding to us as yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and I just smiled. I was like, wow, I miss the respect of the South, that's for sure, you know.
It does. It goes a long way, and since you're bringing the RV up, will you tell us what the RV's name is?
America.
Okay.
M-U-R-I-C-A, America.
Oh.
So instead of the E, you remove the and put a U, and like a manly America, you know. And it's kind of the theme inside. There's all kinds of different, you know, 1776 and American flags and Betsy Ross flag. And, you know, just kind of that's the theme of it. You know, and it was stuff that we took out of our home to make it our new home.
Wow. Well, a lot of people aren't familiar with what you and your wife do. So would you share a little bit about how your life looks on a daily basis these days compared to how it used to be?
So right now we took on a new venture and started an LLC, and we're contractors for a company that does commercial real estate, technical MAPA, and data mapping. So we go to shopping centers, industrial parks, financial institutions, and we map the entire property. So that's kind of what we're doing now. What we were doing was what's called work camping. And the work camping is where you work at most of the time RV park, some sort of RV park, and part of your pay is your rent, your spot. So, you know, you get your spot, you get your water, your sewer, your electricity, all comes as part of your pay. But obviously you have a reduction in an hourly rate. And the last round was we managed the only RV park in Jackson Hole, which is Jackson, Wyoming. And we did that last year. If for people that don't know, that is in Teton County, which is the richest county in the country. The billionaires have pushed the millionaires out. You know, we had 50,000 people that went through the town a day, up to 50,000 a day. And we did that last year. And then, previously, our first stint when we left Pennsylvania was a RV park in Clayton, Idaho, which was a population of 7. Yeah, it's an old, old mining town, and it was, out of my entire career, it was probably the best job I've ever had. The owners, Ross and Tosh, they were incredible people, very faithful Christian people, and we just clicked with them very well. We're still friends with them. We try to go through Vegas a lot because their regular home is in Vegas, and we try to see them when we can. And we almost went back there this summer, but we felt like we had more purpose coming back to the East Coast and helping with a friend's mom where we are right now, and helping with my mom. And so it kind of hurt because I really wanted to go back there because I miss them. I miss being with them on a daily basis. And that was an incredible experience. It's an off-road park, so they deal with mostly UTVs, ATVs, dirt bike guys. The owner is an ex-pro motocross racer from the 70s and the 80s, owned a bunch of businesses in Vegas. and they're just incredible people. They run an incredible business, and they're just very loving. And it was a great experience for us because leaving our professional careers, we took almost a year off, and we were just stressed out. I was a service manager for a European industrial machining company for the last 7 years of my professional career, and then the car business was before that. And my wife was in emergency medicine her entire life. And when we left, she was a RN clinician supervisor for an ER in Williamsport. So when she worked, she ran the ER. She was the supervisor. And, you know, running an ER, you know, I mean, you know, it can be total chaos when you're there. And, you know, by the time she left the house and came home, it could be 13, 14-hour days for her. Now, she didn't work like us normal people where it was 5 days a week. But when she did have off, it was just multiple days of compression because she saw death and dismemberment and chaos and crazy people and drug addicts. And so eventually, you know, it tears you apart. And she had been doing it for 20 years, you know. And so we had, you know, took a road trip. A year after our marriage, we called our honeymoon because we never took a honeymoon, and we went across the country and we did 5,000 miles in about 17 full days. And we just, it was during COVID, and we just had our eyes opened and felt like we had lost purpose. We had nothing to ask for. We both had very good incomes. We had no debt. The house was the only debt. All the cars were paid for. We had three cars. You know, we lived very well. Amazon every day, restaurants whenever we wanted, and our vacations were what we made of them, you know, and we didn't have to worry about budgeting for them because we had the money. And we weren't happy, you know, because you struggled to just get to those 1 or 2 weeks a year that you could try to decompress, which for me, I couldn't because my job dealt with manufacturing. So I was on 365 24/7. So I would get calls at 2, 3 a.m. at times for a customer who was breaking down. And so, you know, when I went on vacation, it was very difficult to pull away from that. And our honeymoon trip, I had asked three of my colleagues to kind of oversee my territory, and they did. And I left my computer and my phone at home, and that was the first time in 6 years. That I did that, and she left work at work, and we just met so many incredible people, and we realized we had lost purpose, you know. And I had said to her, you know, I feel like we're supposed to be doing something else. I feel like God wants us to do something else, and I don't know what that looks like, but I feel like, you know, we need to help people, and we need to have our own little missionary or try to do something. But our life is not sustainable. You know, we can't keep doing what we're doing. And so we talked about the RV life, and we got home and we really dove into it and realized this is something that we could probably do. We don't have kids. We're not having kids, you know, and if we sold everything we owned, what is the worst thing that could happen? We have to come home and we can go back to work and be manager somewhere and start all over again if we had to. The management experience will always be there. And so we're like, well, you know, maybe we should do it. And there was some indications and some things through our pastor that we spoke about that he brought up to us that we didn't bring to him. And we just realized that this is something that we should probably do. And our pastor said, who was our friend, Mike and Shelley, had said, you know, you guys need to go home and just kind of pray about it. And this is a very, very short version of this story. And and so we did. And immediately the next day, everything just started to fly out the door. We sold the house in 24 hours. We sold every vehicle within a day. Everything in the house we sold went right out the door. I mean, literally within months, we were done, and we weren't going to leave for another year. And my wife was stuck in a contract, and we come to find out that her contract, we thought we were going to owe several thousands of dollars if we tried to break her contract. And she had asked work, and work said, oh, no, at the end of August, you only owe $1,000. She comes home all excited and says, we can leave sooner. And we just bought the motorhome in Arizona. We didn't even pick it up yet. And said, okay, let's just all make it happen. And literally, we put the house up. It sold in 24 hours. We flew to Arizona. We picked the motorhome up. Her best friend, John, has a 15-acre farm around the corner. We made a spot there, and we have water and electric there. We put the motorhome there. We moved out of the house, and the next thing you know, we told our jobs, and we were gone. I mean, we left. We had no plan. The only plan was to go to Disney World, you know, just kind of see some things that we both wanted to see. And after that, it was no plans whatsoever, and just God guided us, and we were able to help people on the side of the road and do different things. And you know, people we met in Tampa, that the whole reason we're here right now in Pickens, South Carolina, Jen and Joe, we met them through an app for RVers like Airbnb. And it's just a spot you park on people's property. And we kept going back to them. And the next thing you know, we're spending every day with them. We're going to church with them. And all these things, and we were able to help them in so many different ways that we didn't realize we were doing, you know, until Jen said something to my wife and said, I didn't realize God sent you to us to help us until just now. And, you know, and we were able to build this relationship, and now they're family to us, you know. It's just, there's so much out there, but again, it's not all happy and rainbows and everything else in between, because we've had a lot of trials. You know, the rig is broken down. It's broke down right now. It's in the shop, you know, and there's a lot of bad things that have happened, or I don't want to say bad, but just rough experiences where, you know, we didn't expect these things, but that's part of life. You know, it's just, you figure it out, but God has kind of guided us into these places where we're staying in a tiny house right now in between Joe and Jen and their neighbor, and their neighbor owns the house. And they've been gracious to allow us to stay in this house because they don't use it.
Drew, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Absolutely.
Because your enthusiasm is so strong and awesome. And I'm wondering if you were this enthusiastic before this lifestyle change.
No.
No.
No. I mean, listen, hanging out with my friends and joking around is one thing, but on my daily life and how I felt about life, no. I didn't know what we were doing with our lives, you know?
Wow. But it's, you really have found your purpose then, because it's just coming through your pores. Like, it's just, it's in your voice, it's in your energy. Do you feel aligned with what you're supposed to be doing here on this planet?
We do. We do, but we're also talking about, do we only want to do this part-time and kind of settle somewhere part of the year and then continue to do this part of the year? Just because we're missing not having a brick and mortar home.
Right.
You know, the rig is great, and you've seen it. It's big, you know, and we went that route because we wanted room. But as you realize, it's still an RV, even though it's 40 feet long and it opens up pretty big, it's still just an RV. And you kind of wish you had a brick and mortar and a yard, and because you're restricted, especially with the dogs. I mean, the dogs are our kids, and we never leash them until this, we've had to do this world, you know. And now we've been fortunate. There's a lot of places that we go that we don't have to leash them, but, and we do that on purpose. But at the same time, it's, you just want a home, you know. And I don't know how long we want to do this, and God may have a different plan. He may say, yes, you can do this part-time, or you can do it, you have to keep doing it full-time, or no, you're done, you need to sell the RV and just park it somewhere. But every time we've talked about it, or we've prayed about it, or talked to other people about it, it just, you kind of figure it out. And, you know, as to me, as a newer Christian, you know, when I married my wife, that faith part is still very hard for me. I mean, I sin every day. I do stupid stuff. I think stupid stuff, you know, and all you can do is just ask for forgiveness to yourself with him, you know, and figure it all out. And my wife is born and raised Christian and has a much stronger faith than I do. And she always has to calm me down when I get fired up and say, you just got to have faith. He'll take care of us. And he has. He always has taken care of us. And, you know, if you would ask me, you know, prior to our marriage, any of this stuff, I'd be like, nope, I don't believe in God. Nope. You make your own destiny, you know, and I've had to learn over the several years how to have this faith, and I still struggle every day with it.
Of course. And it sounds like your wife really has stepped in to your life to shine a light on maybe some parts of you that you didn't even know you needed to work on or to even recognize. And
right.
What a blessing that is in any marriage, I feel like. That's what we're supposed to do for each other as a partner. Right. You met this person and there was a connection. And by the way, can I mention that you met her online?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love she hates it, but we met on Tinder.
I mean, it's
just hilarious. And she hates the story half the time, but it's the facts, you know, and Tinder for her, she was up in Williamsport, you know, which is more of a very rural town, they looked at it as a normal dating site. And you and me, you know, down in the city area, what Tinder was.
Right.
And that's what I used it for.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to lie to you. And she knows that, you know, and I did not want to be involved in a relationship. That's one of the reasons why I was on there.
Mm.
You know, I just wanted to go and have a good life. I was, my last relationship was very rough at the end for me. And it took me a very long time to get over that situation. There's still stuff on it that I get angry about, you know, but it is what it is and I'm okay. And you know, I just wanted to be single. At that point, I was like, I'm going to be single the rest of my life. And I so happened to be up at the Bloomsburg Fair, and I was scrolling it and I forgot the app followed you. And I found her because she was an hour and a half away from the fair and we started talking. I got home. I realized, oh no, she's 3.5 hours away. And I was like, well, I'm already invested for a week. So I was like, you know, I'll come back up. And that's when we went, that whole, you know, thing was shooting and the grilled cheese and we've been together since. And I was not looking for that. I wasn't looking to fall in love. I wasn't looking to find my wife, you know, and again, that was God's doing. That was nobody's doing but God's doing. He realized at that point for me, I was ready. It just, he had to make me realize I was ready. And that's it, you know, it's a funny story.
Well, how did you know she was the one? How did you know that? Did you know, and when did you find, in your heart, did you realize that?
The day we went shooting, she was just the most happiest and just loving person, and I could see it in her. And I've realized over the years she got all of that from her mother. Her mother is extremely faith-based. She's a Christian, and she is the most loving and caring woman. And that's where Marlene got everything from her. And, you know, I just realized we were shooting at a gun range, and she had brought these balloons, and she was blowing them up in my car, and then she goes to hang them at the target, and it was windy, and they're all blowing away, and she's chasing after them, and I'm just sitting there shaking my head. I'm like, this girl's out of her mind. Like, what did she think was going to happen with her carrying all these balloons down there? And then she comes back, and I always remember this one thing. She started shooting her balloon, and she turned and looked at me. She goes, did you see that? I got them all. Like, she was a little five-year-old, all excited, and that is her. That is her every day. When she's happy and excited, she's just got this youthful joy to her, and it's pure. It's just 100% pure of happiness. And it makes me happy, and it makes me want to be a better person. And, you know, I struggle every day. I mean, you know us from Delco. We all got attitudes, and, you know, everybody pisses us off, and we're always yelling at people, and, you know, and she makes me not want to be that way. You know, she makes me a better person. So I knew from there that, you know, this girl was it, you know.
Well, you're so lucky to have found each other. It's beautiful. And I'd love to know if you could just share a couple qualities that you just, although you said she was super happy all the time, what are the other qualities that you really love about her? If you could think of just like two or three.
She can never, ever lie. She cannot even tell the smallest lie. You know, she tries, which is funny, on the small things, and I catch her because I can see it in her face. She is just honest, and she knows no other way other than being honest. And she's always nice to everybody, you know, and it's just to see that from where we're from is just different. I mean, she's always got a smile. She's always saying hi to people, you know, and she's always has that ability to put a smile on somebody else's face. And her faith and her belief in God has just showed me how I can see the truth and how I can see that God does exist. And see it through her and her mother, and how she treats me, you know, no matter what. She never, ever did she ever push religion on me. She never pushed Christianity on me. I would just be curious and ask her questions. She never, you know, when I met her, we didn't go to church. We didn't do any of that, you know, and that was something that came later because she kind of had fell out going to church. And I wasn't that guy, so she really never wanted to go because she knew I wasn't that guy, and she was afraid to hurt my feelings or make me do something that I didn't want to do. And I see all these things that she does for me in that sense, and her patience with me. And I don't know that I've ever had somebody, you know, be this way in so many different categories and just understand how I operate internally. And she's okay with it because she knows that in time, the right things will happen and the right things will occur for me, that I will do the right thing, even though maybe today I'm not doing the right thing. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, I get angry, you know, and like this right now with the rig being in the RV shop, you know, I'm very aggressive because I came from the repair world, you know, and these guys tell me one thing and then another thing happens. And then I start getting angry because now I'm getting two different stories or I'm getting excuses and nobody's being honest with me. So I become aggressive and I make them kind of give me what I want a lot of the times, you know, and because they don't want to deal with me. And she gets very anxious when I get like that because I'm not being a nice person. But not everybody deserves a nice person. And that's kind of some of the things I try to show her is like, listen, not everybody deserves to be nice to. You know, I mean, you can be that way initially, but if somebody starts doing something bad back to you or wrong, then that doesn't mean you continue to be nice. That means, whoa, 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 what are you doing? And so, you know, she has helped me see more of being a nice person, but I've also kept that Philly Delco, you're not going to, you know, mess me over. You know, I'm trying not to say bad words.
Right. No,
you're not
and
gonna
I,
mess me over.
Right. And I hear you. And I also, I really do see the value in what you're bringing to the relationship with her, because there is something to be said for being too nice and really being a doormat, and people will walk all over you if you let them. And there's red flags when somebody's crossed a boundary and you need to speak up for yourself. And you're right. You can't be nice all the time. It's not real. I'm personally right. The nicest person I know. And I'm not just like gloating. I know I'm the nicest person I know.
But you are extremely nice.
Thank you. I've always been nice, but I've had to learn that I have to speak up for myself and not allow anyone to step on me. And I have to be aware of when the stepping is happening so I can speak up for me. right? So that I'm better for myself, better for my family, better for the world. We have to be better at these things. So what a beautiful relationship.
Well, the funny thing is you say that, you say that, and I agree, but the funny thing with my wife is I've seen her be overly nice, but I've never seen anybody step on her. And I think that's a God thing. I think God doesn't allow that to happen to her. You know, somebody may try to take advantage of her, but it may not be her, but somebody in her life, or God has a way of just protecting her. And I've watched it happen, you know, and seen it happen. And even if it's me stepping in to defend her, you know, but for whatever reason, she's never been stepped on. I don't feel like, at least that I know of, that she's been stepped on, because God has always had this wall protecting her when the time is needed.
Yes. Will you share with us, if you don't mind, the prayer that you said that night that you went home and prayed about what to do as far as deciding to do the RV venture or not? Do you remember what was said in that prayer or something like it?
Well, the funny thing is we didn't do it that night.
Okay.
We didn't talk about it for 3 days. We were in Bible study, and Mike and Shelley, our pastor and his wife, they're friends of ours, and they always kept us usually afterwards, and they kept us that night, but specifically said, "Hey, we need you guys to stay." And he kind of went through that he felt. I had said something, we were in a James section, I had said something, and I just kind of, like I'm talking to you, I just ramble, and I keep going, and I don't realize always what I'm saying. And he just said, "Listen, you know, I just got a confirmation. I knew I had to tell you about something, but this tonight was a confirmation, and I'm just the messenger, you know, you guys need to be part of a ministry, and I don't know if that means you take over our church or you do something else." We were like, "Ha-ha, funny you mentioned that. This is what we've been talking about, and going on the road and helping people." And he was the one that said, "You need to go home, and you need to pray about it, and you either say yes, no, or not right now. And you guys worded how you want, and then, you know, but that's between you guys." We went home, and we didn't talk about it for 3 days. Neither of us mentioned it. And we were sitting in the living room. Marlene looked at me and said, "We need to pray about this." And I knew what she meant. And I was like, "I know." And she goes, "Why don't we just do it right now?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, we've already made the decision that we want to do it. So that's a yes." And she goes, "Yep." And I said, "All right." So she actually did the prayer. I don't think I did it. I think she did it. And it was basically like, you know, "God, listen, we've heard you speaking, and we've decided to say yes. And we don't know how that looks, but whatever you want us to do, we will do that, and we will follow the path as best of our abilities." And, you know, I don't remember all the details, but it literally was probably less than a minute prayer. And we said amen, and that was it. And that's when everything, literally the next day, stuff just started falling. I mean, it was crazy.
Oh my God,
the
power.
Amount of things that, wow. And these is where I'm like, okay, this is where the faith comes in, and you have to believe, and, you know, and it was just crazy. I mean, literally everything just went out the door. Everything just sold so fast that her situation at work changed immediately, and within months we were done, and we were out of our house. And I just looking at each other, I'm just like, we can't believe all this happened this fast, you know, and that's what happened.
Well, I know personally that with my own faith, that when you make a decision, and even more so when your partner is backing that decision with you, it's like, you're right, the whole universe backs you. I mean, everything shifts and changes, but you have to make that decision first in order for God and the universe to stand behind it, which is what you're saying here. You made the decision, and then you prayed about it, right? We've decided.
Right.
We don't know what that looks like, but this is our choice. And oh my God, like, I have goosebumps, because I feel like if more people heard this message, if more people would realize that if you could just let go of that control and stop trying to do everything yourself and be open to maybe there is more out there in the universe, right? and just make those decisions for your life. And actually, even more to that, you made that decision because you wanted to help people and be of service to the world. I think that's even more the reason why the decision, you started noticing all of these things changing and happening so quickly, because it wasn't just for you and Marlene. It was for the world, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to explain to someone about the faith part and then just believing. But once you have that conviction and you have that trust in God, and, you know, I never had that before, you know, and the first time that that happened to me was the day of our marriage.
I want you to tell that story. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to take a quick break because I want everybody to just hang tight, or maybe go grab a drink and come back. I don't want anyone to miss this story. This is such a beautiful story. So hang tight. We're just going to take a quick 2 or 3 minute break. And when we come back, Drew, please share that story if you don't mind.
Yep, I will. No problem.
Okay, awesome. Everybody hang tight.
Julia Jarrett of Made by Venus Moon will host a broom making workshop to introduce participants to the art of broom making in a hands-on accessible format on Saturday, September 6th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the historic Kennedy Pharmacy located at 323 East Broughton Street. Each participant will leave with their own handmade miniature broom. To register, visit DavenportHouseMuseum.org/public-programs. In Reflection, Contemporary Art in Ourselves opens at the Jepson Center of the Telfair Museums on April 25th. This exhibit is a long-term, evolving installation of Telfair Museum's modern and contemporary collection and select loans organized in reflections which broadly explore personal, social, and cultural themes. More information about this exhibit can be found at www.telfair.org. Evening Eclectic features weekly conversations with and the music of national and international musicians from a wide range of musical genres. Join me, Dave Lake, your Evening Eclectic host, and these musical guests each week on Sunday nights from 8 until 10 p.m. on WRUU.
You're listening to your radio station, WRUU, which is presented by people just like you, people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and other Savannah residents. Therefore, WRUU is your community radio station. So won't you please help by donating whatever you can afford to help your neighbors stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station with a monetary contribution of any amount. Again, you can support your local radio station at WRUU.org. Thank you. You're listening to your radio station.
Welcome back to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Samward. I'm so thrilled to have you here. I hope that you're enjoying this conversation with Drew. He is just bringing so much insight and wisdom, and I want to hear the marriage story, Drew. So before further ado, please go for it. Let's hear it.
So as I had said previously, you know, I struggled to you know, the whole God thing. I mean, I consider myself atheist. It's what it was. My dad was atheist. My mom was a non-practicing Catholic, you know, and I did, when I was a kid, the whole CCD thing. But all I knew was the Catholic world, which is prevalent in Delco in Philadelphia. You know, it's you're some sort of Catholic or you're Jewish, you know. And,
right.
And the only time I ever went to church was, you know, funerals or weddings. You know, that was it. I didn't go any other time. And so that world did not call to me. You know, it actually pushed me away because of, I just felt there was a lot of restrictions and rules and regulations and all these different things. You know, so, you know, through the years with Marlene, I would just kind of ask her questions because I knew nothing about Christianity. You know, I had one or two friends that were maybe Christian, but they weren't really, I feel, you know, had the information that I wanted at the time. So, you know, I just would ask her questions. And one of the biggest things you know, that kind of opened my eyes is there's a movie called The Machine Gun Preacher, which is a Gerard Butler, I think, plays the main guy. And it's a true story about a pastor in Pennsylvania. I think it's Pittstown. He has a church in Pittstown, but he didn't start out that way. He was a biker and drug addict and jail time. His wife was an ex-stripper. And anyway, it's a great movie, but he ends up in Africa and helping build, I can't think of the name, the place for children, orphanages. He was building orphanages, and he had built his own. And they, of course, the kids are getting trafficked half the time. And he ends up getting a machine gun in his hand with his security guys, and he starts killing these guys. And so I'm like, I knew this was a true story. And I'm like, I don't understand how this guy's a pastor and he's killing people. Like, it didn't make sense to me. And this guy is still around today and is still doing this life. And so, I mean, he's not a perfect man. He's got some anger issues and you can look him up on YouTube, but his whole thing is to save these children, and he'll do what he has to do, and he kills people in Africa to keep the children alive and being sex trafficked. And I had asked her about this, and she goes, Drew, what you don't understand is God can take down whatever he needs to take down, and if that's what he wants to do, he'll send somebody to do it. And he says, she said to me, do you believe those men need to be alive? I said, no, I'd kill those guys. You know, give me a gun, I'll kill them. And she goes, exactly. She goes, they're bad people, and God is righteous, and people don't realize how righteous he is. And there are stories in the Bible about how righteous he is. So that opened my eyes and kind of gave me a little bit different aspect of Christianity and God. And so, you know, I still struggled. And, you know, the night of our wedding, I started to feel bad because I'm now going to marry a girl that was raised Christian, and I wasn't. I still hadn't accepted God or fully believed, you know. And my wife would always say, all you got to do is ask, meaning just ask God. Just ask God, hey, I need help, whatever. And I would never really ask because I was afraid of the answer, because if I got the answer, my life was going to change. And that was my biggest fear, is I've spent the last 40 plus years not believing in God and living this life. And I would have to be a better person. And so that scared the hell out of me. And so now I feel like I'm doing something bad to Marlene, because I'm going to marry her and I don't believe in God and I don't believe in Christianity. And so, you know, my parents were at the house, everybody was there, everybody's asleep, and she's in bed next to me asleep. And I had a conversation, you know, the way people view prayer, to me, it was always, you're putting your hands together, you're kneeling, you know, what you've seen in your surroundings. And for us, that was the Catholic Church. And I was like, I just felt that was just always the stupidest thing, you know? So I was like, you know what? If I'm going to talk to God, I'm going to talk to God on my terms. And I was sitting up in bed and I just sat there and I had a conversation and I just said, look, I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. I'm about to marry this girl who's been Christian her entire life. Her mom has such a heavy faith. I said, and here I am, and I don't believe in you, and I'm going to marry this girl. And I'm afraid that I'm going to hurt her because I'm going to pull her away from her Christianity, which I've already felt like I've done, because she's not going to church. She's not doing anything. And so I said, you've got about 15 hours to prove to me you exist. I don't know how you're going to do that. I said, but you got about 15 hours, and if you prove to me that you exist, then we'll have another conversation. I said, but otherwise, she's getting married at 5:30 tomorrow. And that was it. I didn't say any kind of amen. I didn't say anything. I just said, I gave him an ultimatum. Like, you need to show me. Like, I was mad. I'm like, you got to show me. And so we get up, we go through the day. One of my best friends, Gabe, was with us. He's a photographer. We're running around taking pictures all day, and a half hour before the wedding, we're on a silver bridge in Jersey Shore, PA, because that's where the house was. And everybody's driving by and beeping their horns. And me, I'm a car guy, you know, and these two cute girls drive by in a Mustang. And I'm like, oh, it's a nice Mustang. Oh, look, they're cute, you know, and they're beeping and they drive by. And then all of a sudden they turn around and they pull over on the side of the road and they get out. And we all kind of looked at each other, the three of us, and we're like, I wonder what they want. Marlene's probably like, oh, they probably just want to say, you know, congratulations, blah, blah, blah. And so they come over, and their names are Skylar and Danielle. And Skylar was 17 at the time, I think, and Danielle was 15, and local girls. And walked over, and Skylar looked at us and said, I am so sorry to interrupt you. And we're like, no, what's going on? She goes, this has never happened before. She goes, but we passed you guys, and as soon as we got off the bridge, God told me I had to stop, turn around, get out, and come and pray for you.
Oh, now, my goodness.
Marlene, to her and her world, that was something that has just occurred to her in the past, things like that. I feel like I need to pray for you. People coming up, I feel like I need to pray for you. You know, God told me I need to pray for you. Gabe's just there taking pictures. He's like, oh, that's great. You know, I'll take some pictures. You know, me, in my mind, I'm like, here we go. Now it's going to start, because I just was in awe. And my wife is completely unaware of any of this. She doesn't know I had this conversation with God the night before, nothing. And I just stood there, tried to play it off. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And in my head, I'm like, crap. My life is about to change, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And so we prayed, and Mike, our pastor, you know, we did the whole, you know, meeting the pastor beforehand, having a couple meetings. And Mike never questioned my background, never questioned that I wasn't religious. His biggest thing was, am I going to take care of Marlene? Am I going to be this? Am I going to be that? Am I going to love her till the day I die and all these things? And of course, I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And Mike is the greatest guy in the world. Him and his wife are incredible. And they have a huge part in our life. And but he always knew my background and knew I didn't have faith. And so, you know, Mike is the amount of faith. Now, obviously, he's a pastor, but the amount of faith this man has, him and his wife, are just, it's insane. And the loving and caringness that they have for people is just blows me away. They're like Marlene's mother, the same way. And so, you know, I said to the girls, I said, listen, we're getting married in a half hour. The church is a mile down the road. Why don't you guys come to the church? And they're like, yeah, sure, we'll come. That'd be great. So Mike greets everybody at the church, and it's a Wednesday at 5:30. There's like 30 people there. You know, we just decided to do it on the day of our first date. We were going to do the whole big shebang thing and decided we didn't want to spend the money. We're just going to do it on the day of our date. So our first date. So there was like 30 people in the church, you know. And so Mike knows everybody in town. He was born and raised there. And the girls walk in, and it was basically a private event. And Mike says, can I help you? And Skylar says, you know, we just met Marlene and Drew on the Silver Bridge. We had a situation. God made me turn around and stop and pray for them. And Mike just looked at her and smiled. And he knew exactly the whole reason they were there, and said, yes, come on in. And then when we got back to the church, he's like, I met the girl. He came to me because I saw him first, and he says, I met the girls. I was like, I just looked at him and shrugged my shoulders. I was like, yeah, that's another conversation for another day. He says, that's all right. We'll we're gonna work through all this, you know, basically is what he's saying to me. I forget the exact conversation, but he knew they were put there for me. He knew they were going to be the ones to change the way I saw everything and give me that push over the ledge to really start believing. And like I said, I am not perfect. You know, I constantly am sinning and thinking things that I shouldn't think and doing stupid stuff. But again, that's what I like about the Christianity world is that's okay. We are not perfect. The one thing that God wants is love from us. He's willing to accept all the bad that comes with us as long as we believe, we love him, and we have faith in him. And everything else will be okay, you know? And so that's kind of the story behind all that.
Wow. Thank you for that. It's pure magic, really, that those girls turned around and came back. And I love that young girl trusted the message enough to share it with you, because I feel like you do become so vulnerable when you share these stories about your spiritual world, and not everybody's right. going to understand it, and it might seem strange to people. And does it still seem strange to you at times to share?
Absolutely, every day. And I struggle. Mm-hmm. I struggle every day with having faith. I struggle. We had a very rough year dealing with Jackson Hole and the type of people, and both of us, my wife and I, we both fell off the tracks.
Yes.
We had a very rough year. We were screaming and yelling and mad at each other a lot, and you know, had a really bad year. And since we crossed the Mississippi and got back on the East Coast, we've been able to breathe and start building our kind of relationship back and changing things and you know, trying to find that purpose again, because we lost the purpose. You know, and we don't understand that, and we may not ever understand it. Why did God put us in Jackson Hole? Why did we lose that purpose of helping people and doing what we were doing? And we were living this great life on the RV, you know, the on the road, and then we get to Jackson Hole and it all went in the crapper.
Sorry to interrupt. We only have about three more minutes, but before we wrap up, Drew, will you share with us just one little piece of advice about people that work together in a small space? Because I know quite a few people like this, maybe not an RV situation, but there are people that work together, you know, with their spouse. And how do you find time to get away from your spouse when you feel like you need to recharge, when you're in such close quarters?
What I would say is always think twice before you open your mouth. No matter what that person has done or said that may upset you, always think twice. If you got to walk away, walk outside. You know, even if you have to lie to them and say, I got to go to the bathroom, and you go in the bathroom and just sit in the bathroom for 10 minutes. Think about it before you open your mouth, because it can make things so much worse, because we've done it. And, you know, finding that space is, you know, very, very hard. And for her, she's a reader. She'll go in the bedroom and just read. And I'm not. And I'll go outside and I'll smoke a cigar, or I'll just go, I don't know, somewhere, you know. But what people need to realize is you do need to have space. Don't be mad at each other if one of you wants to go for a drive without you. You know, one of you wants to go here or there without the other one. You can't do everything together, because you will drive yourselves nuts. And I can tell you that from experience, you know, and my wife will agree. You need your separation, you know, and that's one of the reasons why we talk about getting a new house, you know, another house somewhere, is to have some separation and, you know, have the brick and mortar and freedom and so on and so forth.
Well, Drew, thank you. That was beautiful advice. And I actually know a few people that I will share that with that I know will help them. Thank you for coming on today. Thanks for being
a
light in the world. Really, really. Thanks for bringing the Delco to Savannah today. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you, Drew.
You too.
And we'll see everybody. You're welcome. This time next Friday on Parenting Room 101. Thanks again.